Your Bibles to Genesis chapter 30. You'll find that on page 46 of the Church Bibles, or page 47. We're coming to quite a lengthy passage this morning, so I'm going to read just a few portions of it along the way and fill in the gaps in between. So we're going to begin at Genesis chapter 30 and verse 25. And as I say, we'll read part of it, we'll fill in the gaps in between. So page 47, Genesis 30. Verse 25. After Rachel gave birth to Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, "Send me on my way so I can go back to my own homeland. Give me my wives and children for whom I have served you, and I will be on my way. You know how much work I've done for you." But Laban said to him, "If I have found favor in your eyes, please stay. I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you." He added, "Name your wages and I will pay them." Jacob said to him, "You know how I have worked for you and how your livestock has fared under my care. The little you had before I came has increased greatly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I have been. But now, when may I do something for my own household?" "What shall I give you?" he asked. "Don't give me anything," Jacob replied, "but if you will do this one thing for me, I will go on tending your flocks and watching over them. Let me go through all your flocks today and remove from them every speckled or spotted sheep, every dark-colored lamb, and every spotted or speckled goat. They'll be my wages, and my honesty will testify for me in the future whenever you check on the wages you have paid me. Any goat in my possession that is not speckled or spotted, or any lamb that is not dark-colored, will be considered stolen." "Agreed," said Laban. "Let it be as you have said." Now what happens next is Jacob tries some really strange things that in order that the animals will produce the kind of lambs and goats that he had wanted. We'll come to that a little bit later on. And he sets aside the strong animals for himself and the weak animals for Laban. So we'll pick it up again in chapter 31, verse 1. Jacob heard that Laban's sons were saying, "Jacob has taken everything our father owned and has gained all this wealth from what belonged to our father." And Jacob noticed that Laban's attitude toward him was not what it had been. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Go back to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you." So Jacob sent word to Rachel and Leah to come out to the fields where his flocks were. He said to them, "I see that your father's attitude toward me is not what it was before, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I've worked for your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. However, God has not allowed him to harm me. If he said, 'The speckled ones will be your wages,' then all the flocks gave birth to speckled young. And if he said, 'The streaked ones will be your wages,' then all the flocks bore streaked young. So God has taken away your father's livestock and has given them to me. In breeding season, I once had a dream in which I looked up and saw the male goats mating with the flock were streaked, speckled, or spotted. The angel of God said to me in the dream, 'Jacob.' I answered, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Look up and see that all the male goats mating with the flock are streaked, speckled, or spotted, for I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now leave this land at once and go back to your native land.' Then Rachel and Leah replied, 'Do we still have any share in the inheritance of our father's estate? Does he not regard us as foreigners? Not only has he sold us, but he has used up what was paid for us. Surely all the wealth that God took away from our father belongs to us and our children. So do whatever God has told you.' Then Jacob put his children and his wives on camels, and he drove all his livestock ahead of him, along with the goods he had accumulated in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. And when Laban had gone to shear his sheep, Rachel stole her father's household gods. Moreover, Jacob deceived Laban the Aramean by not telling him he was running away. So he fled with all he had and crossed the river. He headed for the hill country of Gilead." Now then, Laban discovers 3 days later what's happened. He pursues him. Jacob and Laban have a big argument about how each has treated each other. And they decide that really the best thing they can do now is simply to part ways. They make a heap of stones and they promise each other that neither of them are going to pass over this heap of stones to cause harm to the other one. So we pick it up in verse 51 of chapter 31. Laban also said to Jacob, "Here is this heap of stones, and here is this pillar I have set up between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not go past this heap to your side to harm you, and that you will not go past this heap and pillar to my side to harm me. May the God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us." So Jacob took an oath in the name of the fear of his father Isaac. He offered a sacrifice there in the hill country and invited his relatives to a meal. After they had eaten, they spent the night there. And early the next morning, Laban kissed his grandchildren and his daughters and blessed them. And then he left and returned home. Now we're going to end the reading of God's word there this morning. In Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's The Memoirs of Sherlock Holmes, there's a story called Silver Blaze about the disappearance of a famous racehorse the night before a race and the murder of the horse's trainer. The breakthrough comes in the case when Sherlock Holmes draws attention to the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime. When a police officer points out that the dog did nothing in the nighttime, Sherlock Holmes responds, "That was the curious incident." The absence of something that we would expect becomes the focus of our attention. Now, there's only one book in the Bible that doesn't mention God at all. It's the book of Esther. Imagine that, a book in the Bible that says nothing at all about God. How strange is that? But we're not meant to come to the conclusion that because God is not mentioned, that God has nothing to do with the events of the story. In actual fact, we're meant to come to the very opposite conclusion, that God is at work, even in ways that are unseen, to protect and save his people. Now, you may have noticed as we've gone through the story of Jacob that for the most part, God has been absent from Jacob's story. Apart from the vision of the angels on the ladder at Bethel, Jacob's life has been one of scheming, of grasping, of trying to get ahead by his own efforts and the efforts of his mother. But all of a sudden, God is all over the story. Laban talks about God. Jacob talks at length about God. Even Leah and Rachel, the warring sisters, agree that Jacob should do whatever God has told him. All of this talk about God stands out in contrast to the fact that God has, for the most part, been absent from this story. Now, of course, the truth is that God was never absent from Jacob's story. God had a purpose and a plan for Jacob that was revealed before his birth. But it's only now, at this point in time, that all of the characters in the story recognize this very fact, that God has been with Jacob. When Jacob arrived in Paddan Aram, he had planned to stay only a while. 14 years have passed. He now has 2 wives, 2 concubines, and 12 children. And now that Rachel has finally given birth to a son, Jacob's thoughts turn towards home. There are only 2 problems. First of all, he cannot take Rachel and Leah without their father's permission. And secondly, there is no way that Laban will be willing to let him go. Laban doesn't want Jacob to go because he recognizes that God is with Jacob and God has blessed him because of Jacob. If Jacob goes, God's blessing goes with him. But this knowledge has come about by the strangest of means. Laban says in chapter 30, verse 27, "I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you." Laban had noticed that over the past number of years, he'd experienced a period of unusual growth in his business. His livestock were doing incredibly well, unusually well, and he wanted to know why. It seems that he resorted to divination to find out the reason for it. Now, the form of divination is unclear, but later in Israel's history, all divination would be forbidden by God. Divination is any attempt to gain insight into a question or situation by use of occultic practice. Things like fortune-telling, interpreting omens, or consulting with the dead. Now, it's interesting that the Bible nowhere dismisses these practices as being unreliable or untrue, but rather asserts that God's people should have nothing to do with such practices because they are evil. God reveals what he wants to be known, and God keeps hidden what he does not wish to be known. Laban wants to know the reason that his business is doing so well, and he discovers by divination that it is because of Jacob. God is with Jacob. God is blessing Laban because of Jacob. And when Laban reveals this to Jacob, Jacob responds in chapter 30, verse 29, "You know," literally, "you yourself know how I have worked for you and how your livestock have fared under my care. The little you had before I came has increased greatly, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I have been." Now, when Jacob says, "you yourself know," he means that Laban didn't need to resort to divination to find out why things were going so well. Anybody could have told him that the reason his business was doing so well was because of Jacob. As we would say, it was as plain as the nose on his face. But through this strange means of divination, Laban recognizes God's presence with Jacob. Now, if divination was a strange way to recognize God's presence with Jacob, the next thing is even stranger still. It is Jacob's breeding program. Jacob and Laban agree a deal whereby Jacob will stay and work for Laban, and Jacob will get a proportion of all future livestock that are born. Jacob will only take the speckled and spotted goats and all of the dark-colored lambs. And before the breeding begins, all of those animals were removed from the flock. Now, Laban jumps at the deal, thinking that Jacob will only get a small proportion of any newborn lambs or goats. But Laban hadn't reckoned on something, that God was with Jacob. Now, greater minds than mine have tried to understand what happens next with a wide variety of opinion, but Jacob seems to be working on the theory that whatever the animal sees when it's mating will affect the nature of the young born to the animal. And so he tries to breed the strong animals for himself and the weak animals for Laban. And amazingly, it works. Not because of Jacob's technique, but because God was with Jacob. In fact, although Laban alters the deal 10 times, we're told, the deal always worked to Jacob's advantage, even when it shouldn't have, but it did, because God was with Jacob. At Bethel, God had promised to be with Jacob, and God was faithful to his promise. And hasn't God given the same promise to all who trust in his son Jesus? In fact, he has promised not only that he would be with us, but that he would live in us by his Spirit. And when Jacob recognized God's presence, he no longer had to grasp and struggle as he had done all of his life. He could trust God who had promised to be with him. And when you recognize God's presence with you, you no longer need to grasp for things and struggle for things. You can learn to trust God who is with you to fulfill every good purpose he has for you. 6 more years pass by, and as Jacob now looks back on the past 20 years, he not only recognizes God's presence with him, but he can see God's hand in all that has happened. Time can sometimes give us that kind of perspective. We look back on the twists and turns of our lives that seemed random and senseless at the time, and we can see God's hand in all that has happened. All those things that happened in our lives weren't random and senseless. Those things didn't just happen. There was order and purpose, even though we couldn't see it at the time. I've seen that in my own life, and I'm sure you have too. I ended up teaching in secondary school for 9 years, which began with no intention of doing that, not even a qualification to do that, but it began with a random phone call on a Sunday night to ask me if I would come in at 9 o'clock the next morning to teach sixth years in the school. That one morning became one morning a month, and that one morning a month became 2 days a week for 2 years, and that 2 days a week turned into a full-time teaching job here in Bandon. Now, none of that was planned. I couldn't have organised that if I had tried to. From my perspective, it all just happened. And yet there was an order and a purpose that was hidden from my view at the time. And yet later I could see God's hand in all that had happened. And it's the same with each of our lives. It was Hannah Moore who compared our lives to a tapestry, as we've done with the children this morning. One side is a tangled mess from which we cannot discern much of a design or a purpose, but the other side is a beautiful picture, perfectly planned and designed. Hannah Moore said that we only see the tangled mess, whereas God looks upon the perfect picture. But there are times when we get brief glimpses of God's side of the tapestry, when we look back on the events of our lives and we can see God's hand in what has happened. And here Jacob catches a glimpse of God's side of the tapestry, and he can see God's hand in all that has happened. God's hand has first of all protected him from harm, he says in verse 7. Jacob knows that it's time to leave, but he must convince Leah and Rachel that they must leave the security of their father's home. Jacob sends word to them to come out and meet him in the fields where there are no other ears to hear what is being said. Perhaps he's thinking of a conversation his mother had overheard many years earlier, a conversation that set in course all of the events that brought him to this place. At any rate, Jacob wants to speak to them in private. Here's what he says in chapter 31, verses 5 to 7. I see that your father's attitude toward me is not what it was before, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I've worked for your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. However, God has not allowed him to harm me. Now, if you've been following the story of Jacob through these chapters, you need to stop and spend some time thinking about what Jacob says here, that God has not allowed Laban to harm Jacob. After all, Jacob has a lot of grievances with Laban. He worked 7 years to marry his daughter Rachel, only to discover that Laban had tricked him into marrying his older daughter Leah. Laban contracted to work a further 7 years for the daughter that he was meant to marry in the first place. When Jacob wanted to leave, Laban got him to stay another 6 years to build up some wealth with which he could begin a new life elsewhere. And yet during that time, Laban changes the deal 10 times. It's obvious that whatever Jacob means, that God protecting him from harm did not involve God protecting him from hardship. Now, I don't think we always make that same distinction. We think that God's protection means that nothing bad should ever happen to us. If God is protecting me from harm, then God would never allow me to marry someone who would be difficult to live with. Well, that didn't happen for Jacob. In fact, he got 2 wives that were difficult to live with, 2 concubines and 12 children. If God is protecting us from harm, then God should never allow anyone to treat us unfairly in business. Well, that didn't happen for Jacob. Laban cheated him by changing the deal 10 different times. God protecting us from harm doesn't mean God protecting us from hardship. What Jacob means is this: no matter what Laban did to Jacob, no matter what Laban did against Jacob, Nothing Laban did could harm Jacob. Nothing Laban did could prevent God's good purpose for Jacob being fulfilled. And the same is true for each one of us. Will people do things that will cause us hardship in life? Absolutely, yes. Can people do anything that will harm us by preventing God's good purpose for us? Absolutely, no. The Apostle Paul could write, "We know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." God protects us from harm, but not from hardship. Jacob has also seen God's hand at work providing for the future. Jacob had arrived in Paddan Aram with absolutely nothing. He worked 14 years for Leah and Rachel, but he still had absolutely nothing in material terms. And yet in 6 short years, God made Jacob prosper. In fact, Laban's sons complain in verse 1, "Jacob has taken everything our father owned and has gained all this wealth from what belonged to our father." Jacob, however, knows the reality. He tells Leah and Rachel, "God has taken away your father's livestock and has given them to me." It wasn't Jacob's clever breeding program that had achieved all this. It was God who had done this. In that brief conversation, Jacob mentions God 7 times. God has done this. God has seen the way that Jacob was mistreated by Laban, and God is recompensing Jacob for the 20 years of service. And you know, God would do the very same thing for the nation of Israel when he brings them out of Egypt. 400 years they had been slaves in Egypt, but when God freed them, they plundered the Egyptians and left with their arms full. They left Egypt with a fortune to recompense them for their years of slavery. You know, what an encouragement it must have been to the nation of Israel to hear this story recounted over and over again during their years of slavery in Egypt. Their father, Jacob, had basically been a slave in Paddan Aram. But during that time, he had multiplied greatly in number, just as they did in Egypt. He had been mistreated just as they were being mistreated in Egypt. But God delivered him, and God too would come to their rescue. The God of their father Jacob is a God who provides for his people. But just as that nation who left slavery in Egypt couldn't, many of them wouldn't trust God to provide for them, not everyone on this journey was trusting God alone to provide. Rachel wants to keep all of her options open. Ian Duguid writes this. Wonderful use of language here. "While Laban was away shearing the flock, Rachel did a little fleecing of her own, carrying off Laban's household gods." And yet how foolish it was to trust in idols. Those idols did absolutely nothing for Laban, and they would do absolutely nothing for Rachel but bring her trouble. The nation of Israel, while escaping slavery in Egypt, well, they found it much harder to escape worshipping the gods of Egypt. How difficult they found it to trust in the God who had rescued them to also provide for them. And yet we struggle in the very same way, don't we? We struggle to trust the God who rescued us to also provide for us. And yet how foolish that thinking is. The Apostle Paul would say, "He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things?" Why would God give us that which is most precious to him and then withhold lesser things from us? Will the God who gave up his son keep anything from us that is for our good? Will the God who saved us fail to provide for us in the future? The God who rescues is also the God who provides. As future generations read this story of their father Jacob, They'd clearly recognize God's presence with Jacob. They would see God's hand at work orchestrating the events of Jacob's life. But surely they would ask the question, what was God's purpose in all of this? Well, the end of the story helps us to discern God's purpose in all that happened in Jacob's life. 3 days before it, 3 days pass before Laban realizes that Jacob has fled. Laban pursues him. Jacob is too valuable to let go. But on the way, God appears to Laban, warning him to be careful how he treats Jacob. The best that Laban can hope for is an agreement to simply leave each other alone. Laban doesn't want to see Jacob again, and Jacob has no desire to see Laban's face again. Jacob feels that he has been mistreated by Laban for 20 years, and Laban thinks that everything Jacob is leaving with really belongs to him. In fact, Laban says, "The women are my daughters, the children are my children, the flocks are my flocks." Laban will let Jacob leave, but very reluctantly. So they set up a heap of stones and make an agreement that neither of them will pass this heap of stones to cause the other harm. We have a saying, good fences make good neighbors. And that's what they were doing here. But what is God's purpose in all of this? Well, God is separating a people for himself. Jacob's descendants will be a distinct people, not connected to Laban and his family, not connected to Esau and all of their families. Jacob will soon be renamed Israel. His 12 sons will form the 12 tribes of Israel, and they will become the nation of Israel. They, like their father, will be taken captive into Egypt, mistreated as slaves, but rescued and recompensed when God delivers them from Egypt. And as God's people, they were to be a distinct people, not living like the other nations around them. And the very same thing is true of the Church of Christ. The word church simply means called out. We are to be a distinct people belonging to God. The Apostle Peter would write, "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his wonderful light." God was separating a distinct people who would belong to himself. And we must live as a distinct people belonging to God. Not as other people live their lives, but we are to live our lives in such a way that declare the praises of the one who rescued us from our sin, who is present with us through all of life's struggles, who does not let anything or anyone hinder his good purpose for us, even when we experience hardship, and will one day take us to be with himself forever. Let's pray together.